everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI. 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today I was looking at a patient had walked in who had their identity stolen. Imagine what that's like, having your identity stolen, your identity. You know, I mean, it's like, can somebody steal your identity? Well, they had taken their credit cards and their social security number, and they had created an identity with which they took a lot of loans and bought things. And so when the person got telephone calls from collectors, she said, that's not me. It's not me you're talking about. I didn't do those things. I could prove I didn't do those things. But imagine having to defend who you are. Imagine saying to somebody, that's not me. It's not who I am. Very often, people are accused of things that they didn't do. It's as if somebody is talking to somebody who's not you. Well, is it possible that sometimes we forget ourselves? Sometimes we actually are the person they're talking about, but we don't recognize ourselves. Is that possible? We know that's possible also. Are there times that you literally give up your mind? I was looking at a Torah discussion which says there's another kind of stealing. And pardon me for this pronunciation. It's GENEAVAT, EIVAT, DA apostrophe AT. So it's Genevat Dat. It's a Hebrew term for stealing someone's mind. And in the rabbinic mindset, a person is guilty for stealing someone's mind. And stealing someone's mind has a lot to do with deception. You know, if I deceive you into thinking that I'm trustworthy, and then I steal from you, have I stolen your mind? Have I gotten your mind to trust me? Okay, that's in the subtle way. What if through coercion I have convinced you to give up something you believe in? Tell me the names of your friends who might have been on that commie list, who have gone to those meetings with you, as they used to say during the McCarthy hearings. No, I refuse to give it up. Well, give it to me or I'm going to break your toes. All right, I'll tell you. Coercion, torture, you know, any number of things. Makes you give up your mind sometimes. There are a number of things where you lose your sensibilities. And today, I want to talk about this idea that so many people have brought to me about people whose minds have been stolen. Now, of course, when you think about stolen minds, you think about a cult. You know, and a person's in a cult, and they're in a cult, and they're all worshiping, and they all, you know, are facing the east and wearing colored robes, and then they are all worshiping the same kind of thing, and they're banding together. And your mother says, I don't know what happened to her. She is part of a cult. The cult took over her mind. And so what they do is they go in and they get a group of people and they jump in the house and they grab the person against their will and they bring them home and they put them in a chair and they force them to be in a room and they have somebody comes in who is a reprogrammer, he's called, who now comes in and takes away the cultish mind. Is he taking away the cultish mind, or is he just giving him a different kind of mind? You know, what's the story? And they say, oh, you know, we're going to remove this cult thinking from your mind because your mind has been possessed. Now, how many of you have ever felt possessed by your mind? How many of you have ever felt that, you know, jealous beyond control, obsessive beyond control? Can you imagine if somebody had a little doll made of straw and they had pins in the doll and they wanted to put them in your brain, but because we know so much about the mapping of the human brain now, we can put them in very specific spots. We can go to your amygdala and make you nervous. We can go to your prefrontal cortex. You know, a real scientist with pins and a voodoo doll can do wonders to you. And it makes you think a certain way or feel a certain way, but you don't. The truth of it is, there are things that happen to us that really are forcing us to behave and think in ways that are almost unfamiliar to us. Like rage. You know, there's a point at which you can become so rageful that you don't even recognize yourself. Take a look at addictions, for example. In addictions, a person is smoking cigarettes. And you know, smoking cigarettes, by now you're fairly convinced this is no good for me. I cannot be smoking, right? And now addiction is the substance owns your mind. See, a definition of addiction is if you're addicted to heroin, the heroin owns your mind. You say to the heroin, I think I'm going to stop smoking you. And the heroin says, oh, no, you're not. Well, cigarettes are like that. You say to your mind, you say to your cigarette mind, I'm going to stop smoking. And as you say it, you begin to light a cigarette. Because your cigarette mind says, oh, no, you're not. We need you just the way you are. So addiction is one form where you have lost your mind. Now, this is the real question here. Did you lose your mind or did you give it up? Did something take you over or did you relinquish it? One of the things that we deal with as therapists very often is people who have a great deal of pain because they are what we call a dependency personality disorder. Dependency personality disorder is somebody who becomes overly dependent on someone else for almost every thought that they do, almost every deed they have. They become dependent. They give themselves up. In the world of sexual play, there's a thing called sadomasochism. And in sadomasochistic relationships, there's the man who is, or the woman who's supposed to be the master, and the other person's supposed to be the slave. Now, one imagines that it is the master who's controlling the slave. Does the slave just become a slave because they are dependent or needy? Or do they give up their will? Do they surrender their will because they get something out of it? How many of you have felt so bad at times, so poor in your mind, that you wish something would take over your mind? A good example of that is you're sitting around your house, you have nothing to do, you're bored, you're watching TV, you have nothing at all to do, and then something comes on the news that gets you upset. And now you're just obsessed with being upset about this thing. You were waiting for something to come along and grab your mind. See, people are waiting. People want to give it up. So mind possession has a couple of interesting elements to it. Mind possession have, number one, a mental set that goes before the mind possession, which is, I don't like my mind, I want to give it up. Good example of this is love. You're feeling terrible. You're depressed. You're unhappy. Somebody comes along, and you would rather be concerned about being in love with them and loving them and calling them up, and when is he going to call, when's he not going to call, what's he think of me, what'll I wear, than going back to the way you felt before he came along. You relinquish your mind to love itself or to something that's called love. So when a person loses their mind or relinquishes their mind, there are three factors. One is the willingness to step out of your mental set that you have at the moment, right? Which is, I don't like the way I feel right now. Now, there are two other great elements for losing your mind. One is peer pressure, and another is rewards. Now, peer pressure would be if you stepped out of your mind and you went into a group of people who were all accepting of you and all doing the same thing. So let's say you're a good kid at home, but you go to college and you hook up with a bunch of guys, and these guys are all troublemakers, and now you become a troublemaker, and now you're screaming and yelling like everybody else is. The peer pressure makes you one of them. But at home, you were a very nice boy, but you see, you're tired of being a nice boy, so you were ready for this. So you give up your mind, and now you're just one of those drunken kids on campus who are going out, you know, raising hell. On top of that, there's reward. The reward is that you get a chance to drink, you have sex, you have all kinds of pleasures, drugs, and you get this kind of pleasure sensation that goes along with it. So now we have three factors for the relinquishing of a mind. One is the desire to give up your mind. The second is there's a peer pressure that goes along with allowing you the vehicle of going, getting lost of your mind or losing your mind. And the third is pleasure principle. You get pleasure from it. Right? You have a dog. Dog sits around the house. He's bored. He's waiting there. The dog's got nothing to do. You have a candy treat. You tell the dog you have to flip over twice backwards, bark three times, and wag your tail, and I will give you this treat. Why would the dog do such a thing? You know why? Because the dog was bored. If the dog was having a good time, if the dog was playing with other puppies, he wouldn't give you one bit of attention. But the dog was bored. Even if you had a treat, he'd say, well, it's not worth all the trouble for that treat. But the dog's got nothing else to do. So now you say, turn around three times, wag your tails and bark three times, and the dog says, well, it's better than that than nothing, and look at all the reward I'm getting. I'm getting petted, I'm getting candy, and I'm not laying here under the bed doing nothing. People are funny. So there are times that people have no space in their mind, and they would just love to give it up. They would love to just surrender. Oh, take me over. Do something with me. Tell me something about me. Tell me something about myself. Give me some information about myself. Steal my mind. A recent article in the New York Times talks about how women wearing red drive men crazy. This was in Reuters. Men rated women shown in photographs as either more attractive or less attractive based on the clothing they were wearing, and the researchers found, psychology professor Andrew Elliott of the University of Rochester in Rochester, New York, confirmed that red is the color of romance. Valentine's Day card markers, lipstick sellers believed it for years. Red, the red alert. Why is it that red makes a man more attracted to a woman? And they noticed that along the primates, the color red, usually in the skin or in the genitals, whenever the female is showing red, it means she is more ready for sex. She's nearing ovulation. So we inherit a thing. We inherit a thing. If we see the color red, we become baboons. You know? Boom. Red. Ready for sex. And of course, if you think about women who are wearing red, you know, you see the sexy red dress. You know, people criticize that person as, oh, she's loose because she's wearing red. So red is the color of ovulation and therefore triggers things. And it triggers things so much that the average baboon who might have been working on his 401k will abandon his 401k if he sees another baboon wearing a red dress. Yes, my friends and my other fellow baboons. Smell will similarly do that to us. Smell could send off a cavalcade, an avalanche of things inside our bodies that suddenly make us lose our minds. Now, we know that. We know that among you know, primates. Here's the thing among animals. Animals aren't always ready for sex. Most animals are only ready for sex at certain times. The females are only ready during ovulation. The rest of the time, they're nothing, right? They're just asexual. Then they get ready, right? And there they are. And they are ready. And the minute they're ready, somehow every other guy knows it. And the people are lining up. They're saying, ah, he's a female in estrus, you know. And so she's wearing a red dress, obviously. And they just line up and they want to have sex with her because she's ready. Because she has this ready, R-E-D-D-Y. Because she's fragrant. And she has this fragrance. And here's the idea. The idea is that there are chemical changes in your body that take place that overpower your will. And they could be any number of things. Bonding. How important is bonding? How important is peer pressure? Why is peer pressure important? You know, when you have peer pressure around, when you have a bunch of people around you who you feel close to, you release oxytocin, O-X-Y-T-O-C-I-N, in your brain. And you know what it does? It quiets the amygdala. The amygdala is this little nervous-racking thing, this little pea brain, pea-shaped organ, this tiny little thing that's the source of all anxiety that drives you crazy. They found when people were threatened with separation from their group that they would feel excitement in their amygdala and they would become more nervous. So the more isolated you get, the more nervous you get. The more you are welcomed into a group, the more safe you feel. Now, of course, there are exceptions to this. There are people I know who only feel safe if they're alone and they're in their own caves, right? Which is another adaptation. But most people want to be part of a group, a family, a collection, a gathering, because it makes them feel safe, which means absence of activity of the amygdala, presence of oxytocin. And you thought it was just you were having a good time. That's why I think that's why people really like to collect at certain times. I think of New Year's Eve parties. I think of, you know, all the people who are gathering with all the energy that's spent. And the main thing when that gong hits, you know, and it's there, everybody says Happy New Year and they hug each other and they connect and they feel connection. Connection, connection, whatever it is, however brief it is. This is Armand DeMille with you. We're talking about your mind and how ripe your mind is for being taken over by either your own chemistry. I mean, your own chemistry. Think about it. You take steroids. Once you take steroids, you don't own your mind anymore. You know, your mind becomes like you're a psychopath. You know, you don't have anything except your own interest in mind. You become aggressive. You know, it's a clear thing. Or certain hormonal conditions that people get. You know, when you get into a certain hormonal state of mind, you don't own your mind. You're crying all the time over what? You don't know what you're crying about. So there are times, even though we like to feel like we're in control, we have nothing to do with who's running the ship. Sometimes we're just passengers, you know, and somebody else is in control. It's important to recognize that state of mind. What about you? Do you ever give up your mind? Do you ever relinquish it? Don't you love it when you're in love? And when you're not in love and you fall out of love, how about being in grief? Now, one would wonder that in grief is not a happy experience. But it's better than laying under the bed waiting for the guy to come along with the candy, you know what I mean? It's better than being that dog who's bored. So now you're sitting around, you have nothing to do, you're driving yourself crazy, and then all of a sudden somebody comes along and you fall in love, and you have this fantasy about the person, and you meet them just maybe once or twice, but you think about them all the time, and then it turns out that they really weren't interested in you in the first place, and now you cry about it all the time. Your mind. You gave up your mind. You said, I will turn my mind over to this thought. Obsessions, phobias, all of these are the desire on some part to give up your mind or to get you away from whatever it is you're thinking or feeling. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We are going to take your calls today at 212-209-2900. And we're going to be talking more about this possession of your mind and the possibility of possession of your mind. While we're waiting for you to call, think about how the newspapers have tried so hard. You know, every industrial society who thought we were going to take over the world, the thing we'll do is control the media. See, if we control the media, we won't let the media say bad things. We'll own Fox News and then we'll own General Electric will buy another station, and then Westinghouse will buy another station, and all these warlike stations. They'll control all the news about the war, and we'll talk about weapons of mass destruction. And here's silly, stupid little WBAI on 99.5 FM raising their flag and saying, no, no, oh, no, 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 you don't got our minds. Ever since the early 60s, WBAI has been saying, oh, no, you don't own our minds. But then sometimes we become sourpusses. You see, and our mind gets owned by just the sourness of everything that we're reporting on. So you got to be careful for that, too. But your mind is somebody wants to control it. Somebody always wants to control how you feel. They don't want you to feel how you feel. They don't want you to think how you think. And it's not such a big plot because you're the same way. You don't want your son, for example. Let's say your son feels bad. Let's say he draws a painting. And the painting is really, he didn't put any work into it, and he shows it to his teacher, and the teacher says, this is junk. And now he brings you home the painting, and he says to you, Ma, look, I showed him my painting, and he said my painting is junk because I didn't follow any of the formula that he said I should do when I do my painting. Now here you are, a mom. You don't want your son to feel bad. Get this. You don't want your son to feel bad. You want to control his mind. You want to take away his feeling bad. So you as a parent will say, oh, son, it's really beautiful. Let's hang it up in the living room. It's a gorgeous thing. Your teacher doesn't have good taste. And you are now controlling your son's mind. We do that with each other. We want each other not to think things, not to feel things. It's almost like it's part of our practice. I can't tell you how many times I see people who are couples who come to me for a consultation and they say things and I say to them, so you don't want him to feel that way? No, I don't want him to feel that way, but he does feel that way. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand?
Hello there.
Hi, this is Ansarara.
Hello, Ansarara. How nice to talk to you at the end of the year.
Right. Same here. Years ago, I almost joined a... essentially, I was lured to whatever. I almost joined... I just forgot the name. Senior memory. Okay, it was the Moonies, anyway. And I remember the whole process of how I almost joined them totally and was ready to leave everything behind and become one.
Sure. And do you remember there was a certain pressure by the other people there, the people who were welcoming you in?
In a nice way, but the pressure was more in the sense of we used to get up like at 6 o'clock in the morning and exercise or run around and have these sort of games all day. Of course, everyone that was there was always talking about how wonderful this experience was. We would have the various meetings. Essentially, in other words, the entire external stimuli was all about joining them and, in a way, leading you in a certain direction, except that the reward was something that you were told, in a couple of days, you're going to hear the end of this. So they kept leading you, you know, to this direction, but you didn't know what it was. So you were very curious. They were saying, okay, now in about 5 lectures, you're going to get the answers. And so we would, you know, go to the lectures. And again, we were very, very tired physically, but we wanted to know, you know, what the goal was. And ultimately, I remember the goal was that, you know, Sun Myung Moon was Jesus. And I remember running around outside and feeling this feeling of euphoria. I just felt so happy that I had known this. It felt so good. But at the time, I had no exposure to my old life.
Do you remember, Ansarara, where you were before that? You were in that, when you joined the Moonies. Do you remember what state of mind you were in before then?
It seemed as if it was pretty happy, but I remember I was alone. I remember that the young lady that introduced me to it was a very, very wonderful person, and we spent a lot of, you know, time together after. It was platonic time, but she gave me, you know, a sense of happiness. Before that, I don't think I was depressed or unhappy, but I was pretty much alone, and I didn't have, I didn't have community. I wasn't in any organizations at the time.
There you're talking about it right now. You were alone. Mm-hmm. You were isolated. You were separate. Somebody
right.
comes along. She says to you, come on, honey. I love you. Come join me and join my friends. You go along and suddenly you're a part of something and you're bonding and you're feeling for the first time in your life a sense of connectedness, belonging to something, and hope. Added to that, the chemical stimulus of having you exercise and work out together and sweat together, which bonds you even further. And then you put all that together and give them hope and say, here's the hope you're going to find out something in the near future. And you're excited about it and your brain is going for it. And then they give you a revelation that is like a private secret. Here's the revelation. You know, son, Yun is Jesus Christ. And there you are and you feel euphoric from it. It's a perfect trip for a brain. It's perfect. It's like just the perfect way to offer a mind that feels like it belongs nowhere to offer it a home. And that's exactly how it happens. You know? I mean, it could have been not just this. It could have been a legal religion. It could have been Catholicism or Judaism. It could have been any of those that could have gotten your mind if they had made you the same offer.
Is that sort of what's happening with Barack, perhaps? I mean, just a suggestion, but anyway. Just
yeah, go ahead. Well, go ahead. Take that thought a little further. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's probably what people need, but in terms of the process, it's exactly that. I mean, people are hopeless. People are looking for something. They want to get out of the condition they're in. And there's this person that's saying, yeah, I'm the and looks like in every way that he may be their solution.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, sure. It's why wouldn't the mind and the spirit go in that direction? I'm not saying that it's incorrect or even legitimate, but sure, the process gets created. So, yeah, the people are going in that direction because the mind has been led there, and the mind needs that. The mind, the spirit, the soul needs that and wants it.
And we have been through such adversity. The entire nation has been through such adversity. So you're seeing a minds that have been through losses and kind of, you know, losing your disillusionment. Everybody, you know. And so you're right. It's absolutely perfect time for someone like Barack Obama to come along, and as good a guy as he may be, we may be willing to give him giant powers if we want to make him God, because we're so frustrated with our own mental sets. And I keep saying to people, it could be wonderful, but he is a politician. He is a man who is a politician. He walks the political fence like everybody else does, and there are other things he's going to do that are not going to be in my approval. And it's okay. I'm not going to get shattered by it. You know? So I think you're saying something very important about the state of the human mind. It's a very interesting year, this 2008. I tell you, it was a year of preparation. And I think what you're saying, Ansararar, is very worth listening to. Watch out for the mind who is too willing to find the next solution.
Okay.
You know? Thanks a lot for calling in. I'll speak to you next year.
Take care.
Okay. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Good folks. Good folks, these WBAI folks. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll play you a little bit of lively music. And we'll take more of your calls. Be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Climatisé
That's Kali, K-A-L-I, from the island of St. Martin, never made it to America. Music not available in, except in some very weird form in America. So you have to go to St. Martin to get his music. Beautiful French, island French, débrancher, which means to debranch. I have no idea what débrancher means. It means to debranch a thing, you know? Debranchet. All right, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Debranching 2008 on our way out the door. Listen, two more days. And we'll be... You know, on New Year's Day, I am not going to be here, but I have presented a special pre-recorded program which has got a certain message on it and some additional music. Now, last Christmas... I played some music that was, this past Christmas, that was mind-boggling. It was so great, and I intend to bring you some great Christmas this New Year's as well, this music, this New Year's as well. Not the same kind, not jazz, but other music, world music. So you want to tune in on New Year's Day at 1 o'clock, you're going to hear some of this special stuff. 212-209-2900. We are talking about possession of your mind. Who owns your mind and how you own your mind? Let me teach you a couple of tricks. First of all, hypnosis. Hypnosis is a very interesting thing, but again, hypnosis only works on certain people. Hypnosis works on people who are suggestible. And suggestible people mean people who are willing or who would prefer to abandon their mind. That's what suggestibility is. Please suggest something to me. I'm bored. The dog laying under the bed is very suggestible. You know, I don't know what to do, so tell me what to do. So suggestibility is a very, it's an element. When you can test somebody who's suggestible, as stage hypnotists often do, when they find somebody suggestible, they do tricks on them. Now, you do tricks on people that can make them do things that you think they wouldn't normally do, but they would do anything to follow the loss of their mind. So one thing is suggestibility. Another thing that makes people lose their judgment and their own mind is called cognitive dissonance. That's when the world doesn't make any sense for a moment or two. You get this moment where nothing makes sense. Have you ever been robbed? I was robbed. I walked into my home and everything was gone. Or most of the things I valued were gone. And for a minute while I walked in, I said, where is everything? You know, and then I realized I was robbed. For that moment, you could have said practically anything to me, you know, because my mind was in suspended animation. Or you hear the death of someone you love. You get a phone call and you say your mom died. And you're in shock. For that moment, suspended animation, your mind is suspended. And it is very fragile at that moment. There, if somebody said something to you during a moment like that, you very easily might take it on. Suspended animation is, your mind is when you're kind of lost in space and you're holding out there and you don't know which way to turn, and then something comes along and says, come on my way. And you say, sure, I'll go your way. 212-209-2900. Let's take another one of your calls. This is Armand DeBeau with you. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. My name is Gates, and I want to say hi to you. And I wanted to tell you that I'm part of another mind. I'm part of a mind.
What part of a mind are you?
I am a happy part of a mind.
Are you just one part of somebody's mind?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And does that main person, does that other person have a name too?
Yeah.
What's their name?
No, I don't think that she would want me to say it. I would get in trouble.
She would get in trouble because there's another mind who's sitting there who would tell you that you're in trouble, right?
Well, then she would like a prophecy. To be tuned on the radio.
Yeah, I hear. But yeah, I think you have more than one person living in there, don't you?
Yeah.
How many?
I got Sophie, and I have Tess, and there's a Gypsy.
And who's the child?
Me.
And how old are you?
Well, sometimes I'm four.
Four.
And sometimes I'm seven. Uh-huh. And I like to play with toys.
And you like to play with toys. And do you have somebody in there who's very sexy?
Yeah, that's Sophie.
That's Sophie, right?
Yeah, she's my buddy.
She's your buddy?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And does she hurt you sometimes?
Never.
Who hurts you?
Nobody hurts me.
Yeah, that's what you're doing, safe in that mind. I really appreciate your calling. What made you call me?
I wanted to talk to you another time ago when you had a show and you was talking about dissociative disorder.
Yeah, dissociative disorder. That's what you have, yes.
Yeah, and I was hoping that you would ask me some questions because I don't really know what to say.
Yeah.
But since you are talking about the mind, like sometimes I'll just say that sometimes when, the person that that is the boss, when she's very stressful, I just put her in the closet.
Yes, I understand.
I put her in the closet, and then I go play.
And then you go play, sure. Sure, it's like a revolving door, right? It's like you could put her in the closet, and then somebody else could come out.
Yeah, I have the key to everything, though.
Well, let me ask you something. What's your name again?
Skates.
Skates?
Yeah.
Skates, you think it's possible one day you could call me and come and visit with me yourself so I could talk to everybody?
I would love to do that, but I don't know how to do that because you're very expensive.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe you have to ask everybody else. You know, I won't charge you anything if you do that.
Yeah?
Yeah, you ask everybody. Just tell, you tell my office that you're calling and I'll call you back. And you come in and talk to me and I'll talk to everybody at once. You bring everybody in, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
But you don't have any questions for me?
Well, not right now, Skates, because my questions would have to be so intense.
Yeah.
That it may actually, I might lose you. You might have to go and become somebody else. Is there somebody else there I could talk to, by the way, right now? Can I talk to Sophie?
No, because I'm running the ship.
You're running the ship right now, huh? Well,
yeah.
Would you let me talk to anybody else? Is there a boy in there I could talk to right now?
No, there's no boys.
No boys, all girls.
Yeah, there's all girls.
I hear you.
No boys. And then what happened was that when she went to therapy, they integrated a lot of the parts, but she chose to keep me not integrated, but co-conscious. So she knows what's going on. But see, I know that Sophie's still there, and Tess is still there, and all the others. They're still there, but I'm the one that mostly is the present outside of her.
Well, I'll ask you one more question since I have you here, okay?
Yeah.
Skates, do you want to grow up or do you want to just stay in control and stay little?
I just like to play. I like to be happy, and I like to help people, and I like to love people. And it seems that whenever I visit my friends who know me, they are so happy to see me. And it seems like I lift up their hearts. And so I don't think I want to change that because I help a lot of people.
I understand. Thank you very much for calling in.
Okay. And you mean for really sure I could visit you?
Yes.
Thank you.
I guarantee you that.
Then I can call the office.
You call the office and they will set you up to see me.
Thank you.
Okay.
So much.
Bye-bye, Skates.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too. Armando Mill with you at The Positive Mind. I did a program about dissociative disorders, and one of the dissociative disorders is called multiple personality disorders, and it happens to be something that I understand deeply, because I did some work with this in my earlier professional career. And it's a funny thing. People with that disorder very often can hear me, and they know I understand, so they will call me. And I've had this experience before where one of the actual personalities called. You, who have been listening, may have said, oh, you think she's fooling around or kidding around or you think it's fake. But in my experience, that's exactly the way it takes place, and you've just been privileged by a presence to hear something that you would never really be allowed to hear. So to Skates, introducing us to the world, thank you. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
Well, that was, I don't know how I can follow up that phone call.
You don't have to follow it. You can just bring your own phone call.
Okay,
but that was
you.
Quite powerful, wasn't it?
Yes, very, very powerful. First of all, I want to say I love your show.
Thank you.
I try to listen to you as often as I can. And I called in today because I really responded to what you were saying about kind of following these paths in your mind and building obsessions and, like, kind of needing a place to, something to play around desirous in your mind in order to, like, keep going and keep focusing on a goal, whether it be a lover or a job, career, or
something
like that.
Yeah, which ones do you usually choose?
Well, I'm pretty much with both of those things. Very
both
much.
Lovers and job, right?
Yeah.
Career and lovers.
Yeah.
And either one can make you crazy, and either one can make you happy.
Yes.
But neither one, if the absence of both, you wouldn't be very happy by yourself.
No, absolutely. Well, no. I mean, because I really respond to a challenge, and, like, I like the idea of fixing on an idea of what I want, my ideal, and, like, going towards it.
Well, give me an idea of a kind of a challenge that you've been involved in a relationship where you pick somebody who is a definite challenge.
Well, someone who, for example, like, is hard to emotionally engage with you.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yes.
Look at that.
Yes.
That's like you going into a diamond mine. You know, you're going to, okay, I know there's a diamond in here, and I'm going to chip away and chip away and chip away until I find it. And I'm going to find this diamond. I'm going to keep working at you, and you're going to express your feelings to me, and I bet they eventually do open up to you.
Sure, yeah. And but then, it's like, at that point, do you even...
Nah, who needs a diamond? Let's go look for some gold.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, then you're done with it, because the challenge is important to you. So that kind of means that you're a hunter, you know?
That's,
and you have a nature of a hunter, and there's a part of you that's a hunter. What is it, when you were younger, I mean, what is it you were running away from so much?
Well, I came from kind of a, I guess, a tragedy in my home.
That's what I hear, yeah.
Yeah.
What was the tragedy?
Well, my older brother is a very bad drug addict, and when I was younger, he would steal from the house and lie and cause violence and things like that.
And did he hurt you?
Yes, but not, like, mainly physically, more emotionally and just with his pathological lying and his constant stealing and his manipulation.
And did your family feel sympathetic with him?
Well, my parents were a little too, they were in denial of it. They were not able to deal with it. So
you got mad at them.
Yeah.
You wanted them to say, wake up, will you? Look at what he's doing. Look at what this guy is doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And they wouldn't wake up.
Mm-hmm.
So you spent your life trying to wake them up. And now you go into relationships trying to wake up your partners. You have just got the expertise in trying to wake people up.
Yeah.
You know, you should be somebody who goes into, like, these camps. You know, and you get these go-away camps for kids where they have to wake up the kids at 6 o'clock. You'd be great. You go, wake up, wake up. You go one after the other. Wake up, it's time to wake up. You'd be perfect at it. You're a wake-up artist.
Oh, my God.
That's all right. We need you. You know, otherwise we'd all sleep.
I just don't, I mean, I love the idea that, like, chemicals control where your brain goes, because sometimes you just feel completely crazy, and you're like, oh, I am just subject to being a human being on this planet, and it's all a mystery anyway, so I can be cool, you know? But I would love to be able to, like, focus my energy not on, like, obsessing over trying to, either make someone...
Well, then, you know, it might be wise to learn more about your chemistry. I mean, I'm always in envy of the people who really take it on completely, like Stephanie Dombra, who works with me, who is such a, her hobby is getting to understand the internal chemistry. And she guides people to do that. Everything from hormones to neurotransmitters to everything. And then, you know, from the way that she sees life, she can actually guide you and guide somebody into understanding their reaction, so that when you feel this kind of reaction, you can stop yourself and say, oh, hold on a minute. There it is. There's my little bonding thing going on. Or hold on a minute. There's my little fear thing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So this may be a year for you to learn.
I think, you think so. I think as I get older, and because I, you know, being female, I've gotten a little more, aware of my chemistry in my cycle affecting my behavior completely,
sure.
And it's way more than ever before as I get older and stuff. And it's so funny because I feel like men are just not programmed on the same thing at all, but whatever.
Men are not what?
Well, I just women, I see my friends and my peers, like girls that I know that go through these processes that are exactly the same every single month. It's almost, and men don't do what we do in that way.
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing. I'm sitting here and I've got Stephanie Dumber in the studio assisting me. He was nodding her head as you're speaking. She's saying she fully understands what you're saying. But I think there's another part of it. When you're a man who's related to a woman who goes through these cycles, if it is women who go through these cycles more than men, you have your own chemical reactions as well. And I can give you examples of this. When a man, for example, when a woman becomes pregnant, men change. I mean, they change and their hormonal bodies change and their neurotransmitters change. And when women, I believe, are in their worst parts of menopause, men change and their chemistry changes as well. So even though it's not as visible, I think there's a change that men have in reaction, but it is just as valid a change as women have, except that I think women's are more observable. You know, and maybe they could sense them more because, you know, men, they can't sense anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they're except the color red, of course. They could always sense the color red.
That's hilarious.
What's your name?
Sarah.
Sarah. Sarah, yeah. I want to thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your contribution. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. One more call, and then we'll be going. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello. Dear Armand, thank you so much. Time is running short. Would it be possible to share your brilliance and your wisdom to let us know what is the mind? Where is it to begin with?
I thank you so much for asking that question. So I think the mind is in Brooklyn. I'm not exactly sure.
Oh, come on.
I've never been sure myself.
Give me a break.
It's too big a question.
Just a little bit. I mean, is
it
nothing physical?
I know.
But we're talking the positive mind. The whole program is so all about the mind. But what are we talking about?
I got you. Well, it's a good question, and I think I will try to address that tomorrow.
Would you please?
I will try my best.
Thank
I want to
you.
Thank you for your support this year.
I'm doing research on the mind and consciousness. This would be a great gift for all of us. A wonderful
Thanks.
New Year's gift.
Thanks so much for being with us. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. You can go to thepositivemind.com and get a rebroadcast of today's program. Be back with you tomorrow at 1. Ton village veut derrière toi, ton enfant dort sur ton dos. Tes yeux ne veulent plus rien voir, Tifi Congo, Tifi Congo. Mais tu avances dans la nuit noire en berçant l'enfant. Sur mon île d'Amérique, je chante.
family who've been serious.